It's time for No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. Here are your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren from the Area Agency on Aging.
Hey, it's Murphy Houston. It is No Copay Radio on Cozy 101.1. We're glad you're here this fine Sunday morning. We're, of course, brought to you by the Dr. Cog folks, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging, which is run by Jayla Sanchez Warren, my partner typically on No Copay Radio, but she's off on vacation. The poor girl had some flu last week. It's crazy things going on, but we're glad you're here, and I'm really glad to have back, because he was gone on vacation, Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County Health, formerly with the CDC. John, welcome back to No Copay Radio.
Murph, great to be back with you. Had a nice time away, but it's good to be back on the home front.
Well, I understand, similar to what happened to me and Carol, that while you were away, you came down with COVID.
Yeah, I did. I went out of the country to a wedding of a close friend in Brazil, and we tried to take every precaution possible. We were among, I'd say, the 5% of the people wearing a mask on the airplane, but we're dealing, and the wedding was outdoors, so we did what I think still are quite reasonable precautions, but I think it illustrates just how extraordinarily contagious the variant we're currently experiencing, BA5, actually is. It's probably the variant that got the president infected around the same time I did, and I'd say the good news for me is that the tools that we have now, I mean, I've had both boosters, so I've had four doses. I took along some rapid tests on my trip, frankly, partly stimulated by your advice.
Yes.
So I was able to determine quite rapidly if I was infected and needed to isolate. And then I had quick access to Paxlovid, which very hard to know for any individual whether or not it makes a difference or not, but certainly I'm old enough that I'm at risk, so I was very glad to have good access to it.
Well, John, with you getting it after leaving the country and me and Carol getting it after leaving the country made me think, are we that far advanced here in the United States with our treatment or in the vaccines available where we feel much safer here? Are these other countries not up to par what we're doing and it's still not real safe to go to other countries?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, the CDC still publishes lists of countries that have particularly high rates of transmission, just like they do in the U.S., by the way. And if you look at the CDC's weekly updated map, we do have counties. One of the counties that I work with, Arapahoe County, is in that high-risk category. So I don't really think we are likely to be much safer here than in other places. I think when you travel overseas, you're more vulnerable to the fact that you don't have a home base to settle in on, and you might have a plane flight you need to change, and you probably have less access to your doctor, and you may have difficulty trying to get health care where you're traveling. So I think those things are all real, but I don't really think we're safer from a transmission perspective than most other places in the world right now.
Well, that's good to know, because I was just reading where it's a lot of bad things happening in Europe again. A lot of it spreading around this BA5 and BA4. Is that true here in Colorado? How are we doing here?
Well, you know, we've been sort of in a kind of a flat place, maybe flat and slightly declining since the beginning of July. But when I say that, we have to take our surveillance data with a major grain of salt, because we know that most people, me in Brazil, I think you might have experienced this, you know, tested with a rapid test. It's fantastic. It's quick. It's not quite as sensitive, but it doesn't get into the database. So we think we may be underestimating the amount of infection that's in the community right now based on official statistics by sevenfold. And most people think we may be at levels of where we were last December and January, meaning there's a lot of infection out there. So, and yet, I think the trends are probably valid. We're not going up. We may be slightly starting to go down. And while the hospitalization numbers haven't gone down quite as fast as the case numbers, they've remained really quite low, as has the number of deaths. That's, of course, the worst outcome.
Right, right.
So I think we, at least with the current variant, BA5, and we think that's probably 70-some-odd percent of cases in Colorado now, I think we're navigating it reasonably well. Now, lots of people are going to get infected. Lots of people who haven't got up-to-date vaccination, including those never vaccinated, have the risk for serious outcomes. And lots of us may have the need to kind of abruptly change our plans.
Yeah.
You know, to cancel a dinner engagement. I have to cancel a plane flight, you know, this kind of thing. And to me, one of the lessons of my own experience is I think all of us, as we live with COVID, have got to realize how nimble we need to be. I'm never going to book a plane flight without travel insurance again because it's just too unpredictable.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, that's what Carol and I did on our cruise, and thank goodness we did. And the first thing I did was to check to make sure that travel insurance would take care of any COVID problems, and it did. Well, I mean, we're still waiting the results because apparently there are so many people that are traveling like you did, John, that I did, that caught COVID, but they did have travel insurance and now are putting a claim in, and it's taken time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And honestly, you know, insurance is pooled security, and if too many tornadoes happen, your homeowner's insurance rates are going to go up. And frankly, if too many travelers get COVID, it may be the travel insurance rates go up as well. So all those of us who would like to be able to do more traveling are going to have to pay attention to that.
Well, I think we're getting a little lackadaisical. In fact, I was talking to two of my adult children about, boy, this variant BA5 sounds like it could be interesting. And they both said, what's BA5? You need to be paying attention. I think you just alluded to that, John, a little while ago. And I'm hearing this BA5 might be the most contagious version yet. Do you think that?
I think it probably is, either because of intrinsic properties of the virus or because it's got more immune evasive properties, meaning that it's less well covered by the kind of immunity we get when we get an infection with BA1 or BA2 or Delta or whatever, or from a vaccine. And that's exactly what we'd expect with any new variant. The coronavirus, like other viruses, mutates pretty rapidly. And something only gets to the level of being notable and detectable if it can outcompete other mutations. And what you outcompete it is by becoming more contagious. So I think this is the pattern we've been seeing and we should probably expect to continue to see.
Well, I was also reading about BA5, John, where the symptoms are more like a cold and a lot more sneezing. And I look back to what happened to me on the ship, and I had those symptoms. Could I have gotten BA5 way back in the beginning of June in the middle of the Mediterranean?
Oh, I think it's very possible, although it could have been BA4, which was another variant that came after BA2.1.
Can't keep up.
Yeah. And, of course, our individual samples, certainly not on the rapid test, aren't sequenced, but you could have eaten that.
Well, it's kind of scary stuff, and you need to be aware. Now, I read too much, John. It's like, don't watch too much news. Don't read too much about one particular topic. But when you and I are going to talk, I'd like to see some things. Now I was just reading where Canada is reinstating mandatory random COVID-19 testing for airline travelers like what you just went through.
Well, I hadn't heard that, but I'm very glad you brought it up because I'm actually planning a trip to Canada to see my grandkids in about a month. So I need to be paying attention to that. You know, I think the issue of, I mean, the U.S. recently, as I think we talked about a couple of weeks ago, got rid of its, you need to have a negative test when you come into the U.S. I have mixed feelings about that. I think that, you know, no country is going to prevent new cases from being introduced into it. So about the only thing you're doing with that is testing, or rather keeping the airlines safer. But I think, as also we've discussed, what we've learned is that while airlines, you got a lot of people crammed into a tight space, you've got, it's almost like being outside in terms of the airflow exchange. So I think the airlines really have done a great job. So I think it's not unlikely that we'll see these kind of things come and go, though, Murph.
Yeah.
So, to your point about, you know, COVID may be like boring. Why do I want to pay attention?
Yeah.
Certainly, if you're traveling, you better pay attention because you got things coming down the pike that may impact your plans.
Well, I do notice, and again, it's seniors, people our age, are starting to wear more masks when I'm out and about. So some people, and we've been the target from the beginning, the seniors, so maybe they're more aware of what's going on. But I see where the CDC is recommending a new shot for seniors, for adults, called Novavax, for those who haven't gotten any shots at all. What do you know about that?
Yeah, that's a probably one of the breaking pieces of news in the last week. So Novavax is a protein vaccine that's a little different in its configuration than certainly the two we've got going around most commonly, Moderna and Pfizer, which are RNA-based vaccines. The protein-based vaccine is built using a methodology that's quite similar to most vaccines prior to COVID. For example, the hepatitis B vaccine is a protein vaccine, or the influenza vaccine every year is a protein-based vaccine. I don't know if it's going to provide any more durable or broader immunity, but it's you know, as a doctor, I'm very glad to have another option in the tool, because there are some people that can tolerate one vaccine but not another. And then there are some polling data that I've seen that suggests that there's a handful of unvaccinated people, maybe 15% or so, who say, I never really trusted those RNA vaccines, or I never trusted that J&J, which was built on a slightly different platform using something called an adenovirus vector. But I will trust a vaccine that's made the old-fashioned way. So I'm hopeful that Novavax may present some options for people that have been biding their time and watching closely.
So is it available now? Can you get it from your doctor? Are they going to have clinics just for that, like they kind of did with the initial vaccines?
You know, I don't believe it's yet available. We certainly don't have it in our clinics. I suspect it's likely to be becoming available soon. I don't know what the supply is going to look like. You know, we've still been waiting for Congress to act to continue to fund the COVID response, because as you and I talk about every week, it's not over.
No.
And we're really used to having free vaccine and free treatment, but it requires congressional appropriations. And I'm not sure at this point where Novavax fits into that. I suspect it'll get funded. I suspect it'll get distributed. I don't know whether every pharmacy or every clinic is going to have every vaccine, including Novavax. I think we have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, it's like you said, relatively new, and I'm sure it'll be more informed soon as we get towards the fall. And speaking of that, you know, school, hard to believe, is like, what, 1 week, 2 weeks away? Teachers are going back in another week. What should they be aware of as far as their kids coming back to school? I mean, parents aren't going to want them to wear masks, but should they be thinking about wearing a mask?
Well, I'll tell you what, if I was a teacher in a classroom, I would wear a mask. And what I've been doing is wearing a mask that I can dangle around my neck. That's what I did on the airlines. And if I was in a tight spot, I'd just pull it up. And if I was in a less tight spot, I'd let it down. And I think any teacher that's either got at-risk people at home, they don't want to get infected and transfer it back to them, or themselves have underlying conditions, it would probably be a smart thing to do. Although, having said that, you know, I know that wearing a mask is really fatiguing, and that's why I think it really does make sense for it to be an individual choice. I suspect we'll see outbreaks in schools just because we're going to bring people together. And just like we have outbreaks of influenza and norovirus in schools, and sometimes they get spread around enough that classes have to be canceled for a few days to let things go back to normal. So I think we are likely to have a successful school year, but it's going to be challenging. Hopefully the trade-off of not requiring masks and avoiding all the, you know, the political acrimony that came out of that will be a net positive for the schools, because we vitally, vitally, vitally got to get our kids a successful year of education.
Oh, I agree 100% for sure. Well, good to have you back, Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County Health, formerly with the CDC. John, stay healthy, and we'll check in again next week on No Copay Radio.
Okay, Murph, great to talk. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too as well. And all of you out there, take care of yourselves. We'll take a little break. We're going to get the latest on what's happening with Alzheimer's from some scientists that are working very closely with it right here in Denver, Colorado. It's brought to you by Dr. Cog, No Copay Radio, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. You need all kinds of help if you're a caregiver or you are a senior. 303-480-6700. We'll be right back.
We now continue with No Copay Radio. with your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren.
And we are back. It's No Copay Radio on Cozy 101.1 Sunday morning. I'm Murphy Houston. My partner, Jayla Sanchez Warren's off on vacation. Lucky her. But the show must go on, as we say. And joining me now is Dr. Huntington Potter, a professor of neurology and the founder and director of the University of Colorado's Alzheimer's and Cognition Center. Also, Dr. Noah Johnson, who is a senior research instructor, doctor in the Department of Neurology, the University of Colorado Alzheimer's and Cognition Center. Doctors, thank you both for joining us on No Copay Radio today. And Dr. Potter, you've been with us before. Good to have you back.
It's a pleasure.
And Dr. Johnson, thanks for joining us for the first time. I hope you have a good time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Dr. Potter, let's start with you. Let's get to a topic we often talk about with Alzheimer's. What causes the disease and what treatments are currently available?
Alzheimer's disease is a brain disorder in which certain pathological deposits, which we call amyloid or tangles, occur and begin to kill nerve cells. So that all of the functions of nerve cells in thinking and learning and remembering are slowly damaged over the course of probably 20 years. What causes the deposits of these proteins is still under investigation, but there are some treatments that are available and FDA approved. For the last decades, four of them have been approved that basically don't attack the disease, but they help the nerve cells that are left work a little bit better. Now, just in the last few years, the FDA has approved a new treatment called aducanumab or Aduhelm, and its purpose is to actually get rid of the amyloid deposits, which we know kill nerve cells. It's been very good at that, but unfortunately, its clinical benefit is poor. It does help some people delay the course of the disease, but it doesn't make anybody better. So we have a lot more work to do to develop new treatments.
Well, it's nonstop, it seems like, Doc. But it seems like when people talk about Alzheimer's, is it an old person situation? Can young get it as well?
The interesting thing about Alzheimer's is that the brain is so resilient that the cognitive deficits that a physician might notice actually arise probably 10 or 20 years after the beginning of the disease itself in the brain. So we really shouldn't consider it only an old person's disease. It actually occurs in middle age and just isn't detected. And even the clinical effects of Alzheimer's disease can arise in people in their 50s, in their 40s, and even rarely in their 30s, depending upon their genetic makeup.
Well, I have to ask you, because there's some talk out there, and this is one reason why we have you on, Dr. Potter. What is APOE4, and what role does it play in Alzheimer's disease?
APOE4 is short for apolipoprotein E4, and it's a protein that occurs in the blood and in the brain, and it has a really important function of carrying cholesterol and lipids around the body. But what happens is that it can come in several forms, and APOE4 happens to be one of the rarer forms, but it increases the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. So you inherit two APOE genes, one from your father, one from your mother, and if one of them happens to be APOE4, then you have an increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease of about threefold.
Wow.
And if you inherit one from each of your parents, it's about 15-fold. So it's a very, very important risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease that you inherit. And in fact, inheritance is probably the cause of 60% of Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, I've always been curious about that, if it was kind of a genetic pass-on or you're just an individual that has it happen. So it is part of the system.
It is. APOE is a gene, and you can inherit it. And if it's APOE4, you inherit a high risk for developing Alzheimer's disease.
Well, Dr. Johnson, let's get you involved here. How do drugs targeting APOE4 work, and how are they discovered?
Yeah, so as Dr. Potter mentioned, APOE clearly plays a very large role in the development of Alzheimer's disease. So this really presents us with a great opportunity to try to develop drugs that can block the effects of apolipoprotein E. So we're not the first people to have this idea. Mostly in the past, other scientists have tried using genetic approaches or using antibodies to try to reduce the overall levels of ApoE in the body. However, as Dr. Potter alluded to, ApoE also has several very important functions in the body. So we don't think that lowering the total levels is probably going to work. So we took the unique approach of trying to focus on one detrimental effect of ApoE4, and that is its effect at creating amyloid in the brain. So how exactly do we go about discovering drugs that can block that one function of ApoE? First of all, we were very mindful of the fact that historically, drugs that have been developed for brain disorders have taken 10, even up to 15 years and billions of dollars to develop. So, as you know, the rate of diagnosis of AD is increasing every day. More and more people are being diagnosed with this disease, and they don't have 10 to 15 years to wait for a new drug. And we certainly don't have billions of dollars to spend developing one. So that really led us to narrow our scope to trying to find drugs that have already been shown to be safe in humans. Some of these drugs are even FDA approved already. And our goal is then to repurpose these drugs for treating Alzheimer's disease. So to make a very long story short, we developed a high-throughput screening method. All the magic of this new method happened in these three small plastic plates about the size of your palm. And each of these plates had 384 individual wells in them. And we put a different drug in each of these wells. So as you can imagine, we tested thousands of different drugs. And we succeeded in finding several drugs that specifically bound to apolipoprotein E and blocked its effect at forming amyloid. And so these are the drugs that we recently reported in the scientific journal Alzheimer's Research and Therapy, and we're very excited about them.
Well, now that you've discovered these drugs, what's next? You further discover them, get more testing going on, or what's next?
Sure. So, we have a truly translational lab here at the University of Colorado Alzheimer's and Cognition Center. We have the basic research arm, which I'm a part of, and that's what we've told you about so far. But we also have a group of clinicians who regularly see patients and also carry out clinical trials. So we are currently in the process of planning these types of clinical trials for some of the most promising drugs that we found, and we hope that these clinical trials can be underway soon. Now, I mentioned that some of the drugs that we found are actually already FDA approved to treat some other condition. So for those drugs to help design our clinical trials, we've actually been able to study the apparent effects of those FDA approved drugs on cognition by analyzing decades worth of clinical data that's been collected on people with Alzheimer's disease. So very excitingly, what we saw when we analyzed that clinical data was that people who happened to be prescribed these drugs that we found block ApoE had significantly better cognition than people who were prescribed a different drug to treat the exact same condition.
Huh.
And lo and behold, many of the people who benefited from these drugs happened to also have the ApoE4 genotype. So this really cued us into the fact that we're on the right track in targeting ApoE, and we're very hopeful that our clinical trials in the future will prove that when given intentionally to prevent or to treat Alzheimer's disease, these drugs can have a large benefit for patients.
That is very exciting news. That's kind of something to look forward to for those already that have that ApoE4, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, great job. We're talking to Dr. Huntington Potter, Dr. Noah Johnson from the University of Colorado Alzheimer's and Cognition Center. And Dr. Potter, how do you discover if you have this ApoE4? Is there a test you take, or you start talking to your physician that you're used to talking to? How's it work?
There is a way to tell whether you have inherited an ApoE4 gene by testing a small amount of blood for all kinds of genes. I won't mention the commercial companies that do this for you, but I don't particularly recommend people go out and immediately find out whether they're ApoE4 positive or not. I don't know whether I am, for instance. And my general recommendation is that you should go out and do all the good things that reduce risk of Alzheimer's disease as if you were ApoE4 positive, because it's going to be good for you anyway. And those include eating right, getting lots and lots of exercise, keeping up your social contacts, and generally keeping good health.
Well, it seems like everything we hear about any disease out there, Dr. Potter, it's those same things. Eat well, exercise, get good sleep. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. What the Alzheimer's Association says, for instance, is what is good for your heart is good for your brain. Good diet, exercise, exercise, exercise.
Well, I guess that's sometimes hard to do. So, Dr. Johnson, do you exercise?
Absolutely.
What do you do? Do you run? What do you do to exercise? You're so busy, both you guys.
Running, swimming, playing sports, really. Any way you can get moving is going to help in the long run.
Dr. Potter, are you the same? Are you out running around Anschutz Center over there?
Well, whenever I walk very quickly, which bothers some people who have to walk with me. I mow the lawn. I dig holes in the backyard for plants. I do skiing when I can, and I try to think as much as possible.
Yeah, that's the biggest challenge, I think. And that's one reason I keep working in radio. It keeps your brain active all the time. So you guys are practicing what you preach. That's a good thing. So these people listening today going, hey, they're doing it. They're the docs. Let's get out and do something.
Exactly.
So, Dr. Johnson, quickly, what are the next steps now? Now you're still developing this APOE4, just experimenting with these drugs that you know kind of work on it?
Yeah, we're planning the clinical trials that I mentioned, and we're also working with some animal models of Alzheimer's disease to see if we can understand how the dosing of these different drugs works in animals, and hopefully apply that when we then carry out these clinical trials in humans.
So, Dr. Potter, do you work hands-in-hand with Dr. Johnson every day, or how does that work between you guys, because you're both really on top of this subject?
Well, we have a collaborative organization at the Alzheimer's and Cognition Center. I probably talk to Dr. Johnson twice a week or so, and more often if something exciting or confusing comes up. And then we have a meeting once a month of all of the members of the center, the clinicians, the animal researchers, the biochemists, because science is a collaborative effort. We need each other. We need collaborators across the world. And we also need our patients and their caregivers, who are very important collaborators in all of this research, because ultimately, we have to try our new drugs in people. And without volunteers, we couldn't do that.
Now, it must get you excited, both Dr. Potter, Dr. Johnson, to see these breakthroughs about APOE4 and the encouragement of things that are going to happen, maybe not as fast as people would like that are sitting there hearing it and going through Alzheimer's or know somebody that is. But would you please keep up the good work? We're proud of what you're doing, both you guys.
Thanks very much, Murray.
Of course.
Well, thank you, Dr. Huntington Potter and Dr. Noah Johnson, for going on No Copay Radio. And as we said, please keep up the good work. And you guys, thank you for listening. Appreciate it. We're brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. And remember, every Sunday morning, 7:30, we're here with No Copay Radio on Cozy 101.1. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
This has been No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. Join us every Sunday at 7:30 here on Cozy 101.1.